We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The book is The Pyramids and the Pentagon, the author Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris and the Paracast. And we've gotten to explore that ancient tale from the 1940s of the Philadelphia experiment about possible efforts to learn to hide under the radar, as it were, and what might have gone wrong. Now, you were talking about the books showing some kind of central possibility here that needs to be explored, an underlying truth?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions made about the Philadelphia experiment, that the government was actively and aggressively pursuing literal optical invisibility. None of the books, contrary to what a lot of people think, say that. They say that was an inadvertent byproduct, a mistake, of trying to develop magnetic and radar invisibility, and that the technology that was utilized had a reaction that nobody anticipated. And from there, the theory is that even afterwards, they weren't really sure how or why and under what circumstances optical invisibility had been obtained or achieved. And so it was all closed down until after the war was over, and then sort of reignited to look into it all again, which would make sense. You know, this wasn't sort of peacetime with a bunch of guys sitting around saying, oh, you know, what are we going to spend the next couple hundred thousand dollars on? This was sort of fighting for survival during war. And if one weapon didn't work, you know, they funneled everything into another. That's why the atomic bomb program worked, because it was so aggressively pursued, you know, with countless man hours and personnel just pushing for this. That might explain why, to a degree, within government, it vanished into obscurity because of the time frame. You know, people were trying to stay alive, never mind, you know, just make a ship invisible.
But how do we know any of that is true and not just a bunch of science fiction stories pushed together?
Well, that's the answer. We don't. But what I do think is interesting is that, you know, Carlos Allende wrote all this stuff about the Philadelphia experiment in Maurice Jessup's book. And instead of just tossing the book in the garbage or whatever, the Navy flew Jessup in to grill him for 2 days and then printed off 25 copies of his book with all this stuff annotated by Allende in there about the Philadelphia experiment. I mean, this was sort of pre-modern day photocopying machines. You know, copying a full-length book then was like a really laborious task. You know, the technology was even different, and you got to run off 25 of them. And they chose a company in Dallas who then had to pack them all up and ship them out to D.C. You know, we're talking about costs that probably ran into, you know, I mean, we're talking 60 years ago almost, but, you know, I mean, it'd be a substantial amount of money to fly Jessup back and forth, put him up in a hotel, feed him, hire the Varro company to print 25 books, you know, all the paper and the technology that involves. So, in other words, I don't see the Navy doing all that if there was nothing to the basics of the story.
That's the thing that bothers me, that annotated edition. If it wasn't for that, I'd dismiss the whole thing. Now, understand that when Charles Berlitz wrote his book about the Philadelphia experiment, and it was a sequel to the one about the Bermuda Triangle, he had never seen the annotated version. I gave it to him. I gave him my copy, and he actually used me as kind of a sounding board for a lot of things in that book, a little historical record.
I didn't know that. But, I mean, I've never seen a copy of the original annotated one. I mean, you can actually find the annotated version online, but it's basically like an HTML version, you know, and with the colors added in, the different colors to demonstrate the annotations. But I've never seen, you know, the original, or the copies of the original, if you like.
Well, I believe Grape Barker published them at one time, one of the many things he brought out. But looking at the end
That's
of it
right.
here, this is something that the direction of this experiment and everything, the Pentagon knows that now. Is that part of the premise?
What?
They know what really happened then, or they care about what really happened then.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think somebody in government knows what happened in Philadelphia in 1943. Whether or, you know, to what extent it's still being researched, you know, versus if they even understood what happened. You know, I think sometimes we give governments too much credit that if they're doing something, it's because they've got all the answers. You know, you imagine you undertake an experiment 60 years ago and it goes totally wrong and you don't know why and it was shut down. And then 30 years later, you're some colonel in the Pentagon who's ordered to reopen the files and look at it again, you know, it may not be the easiest thing to do. It's one of these issues where maybe they're still scratching their heads. You know, maybe there are people in government who are saying, I wonder if the Philadelphia experiment really happened, you know.
Or they think they're a bunch of crazies like us who are exploring it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It could be either. It could be a bit of both.
Okay. Any other episodes of that nature, strange scientific developments that you may have heard about that the Pentagon may know about?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the other one that really sort of springs to mind in terms of, you know, trying to weaponize things at least, which, as I said, is one of the central themes, is the story of Noah's Ark. You know, the fact is today that the Ararat anomaly, as it's known within the Pentagon, has attracted deep interest on the part of the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the U.S. Air Force, and also a U.S. Air Force / intelligence operation known as Project Moondust. Project Moondust was basically an official body whose job it was to sort of acquire to capture foreign advanced technology. You know, say if a part of a Russian spy satellite crashed in the Indian Ocean or something, you know, the Moondust guys might go out there, retrieve it if they could, take it back to the Foreign Technology Division of the Air Force and analyze it to see if it could be used to further U.S. military technologies, weapon systems, etc. And the very fact that this particular unit was copied on documentation on the Ararat anomaly suggests to me that there was something about Noah's Ark or the Ararat anomaly, whatever it is, that goes far beyond, you know, this more simplistic story of just like a huge wooden old rotted boat on top of a mountain. So, you know, I think we can apply it in that case as well. But the big question is, what does that mean then that Noah's Ark really was or wasn't? You know, it sort of opens up another can of worms.
Well, if we're going to explore the Philadelphia Experiment can of worms, what about Noah's Ark can of worms? What might it have been if not just a ship?
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, the story, at least, to answer that question, you know, we'd go back to the beginning of the story. What happened was that in 1949, on one particular day, a U.S. Air Force spy plane was headed over Turkey, which borders on the former Soviet Union, because CIA personnel had heard that the Russians were were starting to build a new military base close to Turkey that would be sort of strategically, you know, at the disadvantage of the Western world, if you like. You know, it would be something they didn't want to see built. So the plan was to have this spy plane fly over Turkey very high and take photographs of whatever was going on in this one particular area. And the guys on the plane, because this is coincidence, but they had to fly by Mount Ararat to get to this particular site. As they closed in on the mountain, which they were using as kind of like a signpost, one of the guys said that he could see what looked like literally like a 200 to 300 foot long aircraft wing sticking out the ice. Now, parts of Mount Ararat, the very, you know, the top parts are pretty much snow and ice capped all year round, and the Turkish government doesn't like a lot of people sort of meddling on the mountain, and it's pretty much closed off to a lot of people the year round. But they reported seeing this vast wing-like structure on one part of the mountain, and then also a similar one on another part of the mountain. So the captain swung the plane around so the chief photographer could actually get pictures of whatever this thing was. And when the original mission was over, they returned to base, the pictures were all developed and vanished into the part of the Pentagon. Some of them, a few of them, have actually resurfaced, and you can find them on the internet. The Defense Intelligence Agency has got them on their website now. And if you Google Ararat Anomaly and go to the Wikipedia page, you'll see one of the pictures reproduced there as well. So they're in the public domain now, but for years, you know, nobody knew about them. And what's interesting is that the CIA got involved in the whole thing in the early 50s. Today they say, well, you know, we sort of looked at it, but only from the perspective of the fact that sometimes, you know, our aircraft would fly over the area and they'd take pictures because they'd heard these stories at sort of, you know, in the Pentagon at work or whatever, and it was just, you know, something in their spare time, just a little anecdote to say they got a picture of the Ararat anomaly.
And we'll get a picture of the Ararat anomaly after we get this sort of picture. We have Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Ha,
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
When I hear about natural disasters and the danger of having no water, I'm not worried. Why? Because I have an Aquapod. Got it from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Aquapod Emergency Water Storage Kit comes with a pump and a huge 65-gallon bladder that easily fits in a standard bathtub, allowing a family of four a 14-day supply of safe, fresh water, and at a much lower cost than bottled water. Made in the USA with BPA-free material, the Aquapod keeps water fresh for up to 8 weeks. Just fill from your tub, then pump into jugs or bottles. The Aquapod is only $29.95, and when you buy two or more Aquapods at MyPatriotSupply.com, you'll qualify for free shipping. Plus, check out the Survival Seed Vault with 20 seed varieties, Tadler canning lids, the nation's only customizable long-term storable foods, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Get stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
You may snicker when you hear this message, but you won't laugh after you experience the best-kept health secret ever, camel milk. Camel milk is loaded with health benefits far superior to other milk. Camel milk has antibacterial, antiviral, and anti-tumor properties, is rich in B vitamins, and camel milk is 3 times higher in vitamin C than cow's milk, and 10 times higher in iron. And camel milk contains 52 units of insulin-like proteins per liter, effectively lowering blood sugar levels. Many of our members testified that drinking camel milk reversed diabetes and greatly improved autism. Camel milk is easily digested by those who are lactose and beta casein intolerant and comes fresh or frozen from your trusted local family farm shipped on dry ice to preserve freshness. Go to CamelMilkForSale.com now and look under Products and Pricing for the Spring Special with free bonus pints. That's CamelMilkForSale.com, CamelMilkForSale.com.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants. So before you plant your survival garden this year, is your soil healthy? Maximize your crisis garden soil with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 Organic Soil Conditioner, Fertilizer Amendment, and Compost Accelerant provides healthier gardens and faster, efficient garden composting. EM1 from Terraganics.com quickly improves soil structure by increasing nutrient availability and converting organic matter into soil humus. This improves seed germination and root growth, improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, nutrient value of fruits and vegetables, and improves shelf life. And when rain is not in the forecast, no worries. EM1 improves moisture retention in soils, helping reduce drought stress. Just like you prepare all else, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics. Life's getting better.
This is Kurt Seven, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
There was a laughter that we used to hear in the days of the shadow. You know, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows. And the laughter that was allegedly done by Orson Welles when he played the Shadow, but actually he couldn't do it, so they had another actor do it. Now you know the story that you don't care about. We do care about Nick Redfern. The book is The Pyramids and the Pentagon, the government's top secret pursuit of mystical relics, ancient astronauts, and lost civilizations. And we're looking now at, shall we say, more legends and stories. Proceed, Nick.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, sort of this Ararat anomaly that we're talking about, this perceived arc on Mount Ararat that might not actually be an arc after all. The CIA doesn't dispute, you know, that it's sort of taken a tangential or very off-the-record interest in the Ark for years. But they've always maintained, you know, we've never gone out there, we've never sort of sent personnel to try and check it out. We've never made a really active, deep, definitive search for it. But that actually is not the case. I mean, we can demonstrate that from the files that have surfaced through the Freedom of Information Act. And I'll give you a classic example. Back in 1975, a new book had just been published on the Ararat Anomaly, or on Noah's Ark, I should say. And the author in question was actually advertising it and promoting it at a shopping mall in Washington, D.C. What was interesting is that you expect people are going to come along to the bookstore and buy copies of your book. Well, thanks to the Freedom of Information Act, what we know today is that there was a high-level order sent out from within the Office of Scientific Intelligence at the CIA, ordering three of their personnel to go out to this particular shopping mall, you know, in sort of just shirt sleeves and jeans or whatever, you know, don't go dressed like Men in Black or whatever, and check out this display. The official documents actually say that in doing so might help us on the matter of the Ark problem. Now, one of the things I point out in the book, number one, this issue of orders, official orders being sent out to scientific personnel in the CIA to check out this, basically like a display in a book signing, all that Noah's Ark, that, number one, makes a mockery of the idea that the CIA wasn't interested. You know, if you're even sending people out to bookstores to track down every lead, then you're sure as hell are doing something. On the other hand, and then the second thing is this reference, this curious reference to the Ark problem. You know, if there was nothing weird on Mount Ararat, if the CIA wasn't interested in it, why were they even referring to it in secret official documents as the Ark problem? You know, so even though we don't have all the answers, we don't have smoking gun documents, we have things like this that clearly show something was going on and there was a deep reason for official interest in whatever this weird thing on Mount Ararat was and still is.
Well, one thing that's always intrigued me is the interest by NASA, I think, Apollo astronaut Jim Irwin, who I think in the early 80s mounted an expedition to try to find Noah's Ark. So that fact alone is very intriguing. It's kind of reminiscent of Neil Armstrong searching for underground cities and lost treasure in, I think, underground grottos in Bolivia or someplace in the early 70s. How about Irwin's expedition? Where did he get his, you know, motivation to mount that?
Well, you know, I mean, Irwin was interesting because, like a lot of the astronauts, you know, who came back from the moon, they came back sort of like profoundly changed. Some of them in like a spiritual, almost others in almost like a mystical way. You know, a lot of that happened to a lot of the astronauts. And I mean, you know, we don't necessarily always have to sort of ascribe that to the, you know, some sort of weird paranormal event that happened to them. All that, though, that could have been the case. You know, it could well also have been the very fact that you're on a different world and your worldview is so strangely changed. You know, you imagine what it must feel like to stand on another world and look out and see your own little planet and you're no longer there. You know, the number of people who've done that is so small, it must be, you know, mind-blowing. But equally, you know, people, as you said, some of the astronauts have been changed in other ways. You know, sort of they began looking into the mysteries of the past. And Jim Irwin developed a deep interest, not just in Noah's Ark, but actually proactively going out and trying to find it. And he went on a number of expeditions to Mount Ararat in Turkey to try and find it. And these were actually sort of only curtailed when he had a bad fall and then basically had to stop as he was getting older. But what's interesting is that Irwin himself actually heard rumors and stories about the Ararat anomaly. And what happened was that he basically just took it upon himself to phone a senior operative in the CIA who he heard also had some knowledge of the Ararat anomaly and basically put him on the spot and said, hey, you know, I'd like to know what's on what's on Mount Ararat and what the CIA has learned about it. And the guy basically blew him off and said, you know, we've never found Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat at all. But, you know, there's a backstory there to still be discovered, you know, what it was that prompted Jim Irwin to realize and follow up on the fact that, hey, the Pentagon seemed to know something about Noah's Ark. And this was way back in the early 80s when Irwin was sort of pursuing the government angle.
Well, what kind of technology could, you know, the Pentagon, the CIA, or whomever be interested in that might be found in an ancient shipwreck site like that on top of a mountain?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, that's the big question. I mean, if we sort of take the literal story of the Bible, you know, Noah's Ark was just a huge boat built big enough to hold a whole bunch of animals inside it, and that was it. But it was still, you know, made of wood, and it was a boat. So that would be something of interest to historians, archaeologists, theologians, etc. But there shouldn't be any reason why a big old boat and nothing else should be of any interest at all to the Pentagon. Now, one of the things I talk about in the book is the fact that Project Moondust, this official project of the U.S. government was and the military was basically involved in obtaining and exploiting for U.S. military purposes advanced overseas or foreign technology. And, of course, if they're going to take an interest in the Ararat anomaly, which they certainly did, then there's got to be more to it than just a huge boat. If we look at a lot of the stories all around the world, different cultures and civilizations, they all had legends of worldwide floods. You know, they talk about the gods preparing them and telling them, you know, to go into the mountains or build huge ships. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, numerous cultures have stories very, very similar to the one of Noah's Ark. You know, the sort of ethereal deities and gods warning people, you know, you need to build this huge ship by a particular date because all hell's going to break loose. But what's intriguing is that whereas the Bible talks about, you know, Noah loading animals on the ark two by two, others talk about the arks containing the essence of the animals or the seed of the animals, which sounds almost, as I point out in the book and as some researchers have speculated, like a massive preserved collection of DNA of life on Earth, which would make more sense than the sort of fairly ridiculous image of trying to see Noah round up, you know, two fully grown tigers and pushing them on the ark, you know, which is liable to get his head bitten off, do you know what I mean? All that sort of stuff to me, interpreting it literally is ridiculous because it is ridiculous, you know, and it's not enough to say, oh, he was able to get two elephants on the ark because of God's magic, you know.
Well, you know, the other question would be then, Nick, if interpreting it literally is ridiculous, what is the Pentagon doing?
Well, the Pentagon, obviously, we're looking at this, I think, another angle. Now, of course, if you've got Project Moondust involved, if you've got the CIA sending U-2 spy planes over, you've got analysts looking at photographs, you've got CIA personnel going out to bookstores and checking out the latest books on the subject, then clearly they had uncovered something of significance. But the problem is, like a lot of these stories, which is frustrating for all of us in these fields, is that we can go so far with them, and then we sort of hit the proverbial brick wall.
Before we hit another proverbial brick wall, we have Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Who knows? What evil lurk? That's the wrong show.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Attention business owners and individuals who owe the IRS. Do you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes? You need aggressive representation. Call Certified Tax now and speak to one of our tax attorneys, enrolled agents, or tax professionals who specialize in tax liens, back taxes, tax debt, wage garnishment, and collections. We won't waste your time. Instead, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. And you can become a client right now. We've settled millions of dollars in tax issues for a fraction of the cost. Find the peace of mind knowing the IRS will not be knocking at your door. Protect your home, business, and family today. We know the tax laws, and we act fast. Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 1-800-685-9751. Remember, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. That's guaranteed. Call Certified Tax at 800-685-9751. That's 800-685-9751. Again, 800-685-9751.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP. As slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
For a long time, you've heard me talk about building your own food supply with eFoods Direct. As a listener, you know why you need to have a supply of the best storable food on the planet. Every day, we document the attempts to take control of our lives. But there's one thing we can all control. Your greatest dependency, food. eFoods Direct products are made with only the best ingredients and none of the trash and contaminants like trans fats, GMOs, or MSG. This food is nutrient-dense and tastes great. It's simple to make, portable, and has a shelf life of up to 25 years. Now with eFoods Direct, you'll get the most affordable, best-tasting food you can buy. And the new products and pricing will blow you away. Compared to other food sources, including home-cooked meals, you can cut your food cost in half. You just can't afford to ignore this. Call 800-409-5633. Or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for specials. Don't let this offer pass you by. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. More of the best for less guarantee.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
We have Nick Redfern. He is not Lamont Cranston. He is not The Shadow. The book is, unless we're talking about shadowy things here, The Pyramids and the Pentagon is the book with Gene and Chris on the Paracast. We're exploring all sorts of mysteries, ancient mysteries, Noah's Ark. What does the government know? Why would they care about somebody's ship that was built thousands of years ago? Or was it a spaceship, maybe?
Well, that's one of the theories that, you know, a number of ancient astronauts theorists have put together. You know, the idea, the very fact that all around the world these legends exist of massive arcs built to preserve life and that they were connected with messages that came down from the gods telling people to build them, you know. And a lot of these stories, as I said, don't talk about animals being loaded on board the ships, despite what people think. That's the interpretation. They talk about the essence or the seeds of the animal being taken on board. That has given rise to the idea. You know, in the same way that on Earth today, there are vaults underground. There's a famous one on the island of Spitsbergen, just off the coast of Norway, which is like a huge, massive seed repository in the event of a national, you know, a worldwide disaster. There are literally millions of seeds stored on Spitsbergen in this underground facility in the event, you know, that life needs to start over again, so to speak. So, you know, the idea that somebody else may have come here, may have realized that the Earth is in trouble, and was prepared for a massive disaster and took some steps to try and preserve life at a localized level by, you know, just hauling off examples of the, you know, the life that existed. And then that created legends of arcs and gods, etc. You know, that's quite a popular theory within ancient astronaut research.
Chris, we had questions from the audience. Any of those relevant to what we're talking about here?
Yeah, a bunch. But I before we get to our listener questions from forum.theparacast.com, I want to just mention to Nick a little kind of an interesting side note involving what appeared to be helicopter flights and construction loads slung underneath that I was able to videotape about a month ago, right near the location of a fabled underground city that's located at the confluence of Grand Canyon and the Little Colorado River Gorge. This is, you know, the famous 1909 Phoenix Gazette story of two guys affiliated with the Smithsonian stumbling on this entrance to the underground city. Now, I find it very interesting that I should go out there with a David Hatcher Childress, Ron Regehr, Gary David, some pretty credentialed and up-to-speed researchers and investigators, and to stumble on what appears to be illegal flights, flying equipment down to a site that may be the ancient place of emergence for the Hopi and Zuni. Are you aware of any sort of government interest in that particular alleged underground city?
I'm not, unfortunately, but the only thing I can sort of comment on is that it sort of parallels interest in other areas, you know, predominantly in the Middle East and South America, where government agents and personnel have taken an interest, you know, to the extent of, you know, spy missions to take photographs or get film footage, satellite footage, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's nothing out of the ordinary. You know, it's another example, I think, and, you know, which is important.
That dovetails nicely to a question from Conrad Hartman, one of our posters here at the Question Bank. And he asked, to what extent, if any, have efforts been made to provide archaeological evidence for political agendas? In Nazi Germany, part of the Annenerbe's purpose was to provide evidence for the government's racial theories. In the U.S., was there ever a religion-driven organization, either funded by or containing elements of the government, whose objective was to obtain evidence to support religious and political goals? Yeah, why don't you address that one, and then he has a follow-up.
Okay. Well, not so much in this issue. I mean, I think you had me on your show a couple of years ago when I had that book out, Final Events, about a group in the government that was sort of looking at the idea that, you know, the whole UFO phenomenon was demonic. That's probably the closest in terms of trying to vindicate, you know, sort of a particular theory that links it sort of with religion, etc. But now, every case that I talk about in this book, pretty much, you know, the fact that it was related to religion or ancient archaeology was a sidebar, if you like, and the entire thrust was just to try and uncover new technologies. It was nothing about, you know, the questioner is actually 100% correct. You know, with the Nazis in the Second World War, you know, one of the sort of beliefs of the Nazis was that the so-called Aryan race, you know, their roots could go back to Atlantis and even further, and they were perceived as being, you know, the master race. And part of the reason for the Nazis looking for all these artifacts was, correctly, as the questioner said, to try and vindicate those theories. But no, in America, it was all about, you know, just going for the technology.
That leads to another question from poster Social Worker Chef. Interesting tag.
He's going to take us to dinner? What's going on?
Well, I'm not sure about that. We'll have to ask him next time he posts. But he asks, if the U.S. government is so interested in finding these objects, what would they do with them once obtained? Would it be a scenario like Hitler attempting to find the Spear of Destiny because he thought it would make him invincible? And that brings up a whole other subject that you address in your book, and that is the Himmler and the SS's attempt to go around the world, which, of course, is one of the themes in the Indiana Jones movies, of the Nazis looking for these occult and, you know, potentially high technological events from ancient times. What about that? Do you think that the government is interested in finding them for some sort of occult purposes?
Well, you know, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, government agencies over the years have delved into occult areas, you know, even things like witchcraft. And in the 50s, the CIA actually had a little side project where they researched Ouija boards to see if they could be used as like a tool of espionage to spy on the enemy. You know, so government, and, you know, it's not much of a jump from there to things like remote viewing and psychic spying, which the Pentagon was heavily involved in at one point. So, you know, they have looked into occult, if you like, paranormal-based areas. But in terms of, you know, when the questioner asked about, you know, what were they going to do with all this when they got their hands on it, again, I think it comes down to trying to develop weaponry. But one of the biggest problems, of course, even for government agencies, if you're trying to find the Ark of the Covenant, you know, which hasn't been seen who knows how long, and you know, they're reported sort of secret storage places for it all around the world. No matter if, even if you're the government, how are you going to find it? You know, that's one of the challenges I think that the government came up with or was faced with, and it was a problem. You know, it's not like you get word that a Russian satellite just crashed and so you go out to the site and get it. You're talking about trying to find something from 3,000-4,000 years ago when all you've got to go on are ancient manuscripts, texts, which have been possibly translated and retranslated and retranslated again. And you know there's something potentially significant that might be worth you finding or trying to find, but how do you do it? So, again, I think a lot of it was probably hit and miss. You know, it's like with the Ararat anomaly that we talked about earlier. They spent a lot of time trying to determine what was going on with it, what it was. Does that mean they answered the question and actually got anything of value from it? No, it doesn't. It just means, you know, maybe they did. Maybe they just put a lot of files together and pictures and were left scratching their heads because the Turkish government wouldn't allow them up there. So.
Your tax dollars at work.
Mm.
Exactly. That's why I worry about things like that, because you wonder, is the government truly concerned about this, or do they have a few wacky people with time on their hands and they want to do something to earn their paycheck or at least keep their jobs so they play around with this nonsense?
Well, I actually think it's a bit of both. I mean, you know, it is a fact that you have official agencies, you know, who have one particular mandate and that's it. What you also have are, you know, government agencies throw money here, there and everywhere and set up think tanks if there's a chance of something working. I mean, I'll give you a classic example. Using the Freedom of Information Act a few years ago, I got a hold of a bunch of U.S. Army files from the early 50s where the Army had secretly set up like a little project to try and determine if dogs possessed ESP.
And we'll talk about the dogs and whether the study became a dog's life in a moment. We have Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Yes, you are.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain. Not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkydd.com. Ask about our new bull repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed. Or your money back.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection action so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, tow line, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
37 things to hoard. Do you have the 37 crucial food items you can't survive without? When disaster hits and mobs go crazy grabbing food off the shelves, your family may be without food or waiting in long food lines. Prepare now at 123survivalplan.com. That's 123survivalplan.com. Many people don't have these 37 food items. Learn what you need to hoard now at 123survivalplan.com. Watch the video over 1 million people have viewed to discover the 37 food items that will sell out first when disaster strikes at 123survivalplan.com.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
So, has this show gone to the dogs? People say I have a bad sense of humor, but after listening to what Nick said, he's author, by the way, of The Pyramids and the Pentagon with Gene and Chris in the Paracast, you wonder, looking for psychic dogs or psychotic dogs?
Or both. But yeah, I mean, just as this is an example of how government agencies throw money around on bizarre projects, which sometimes have a chance of coming true or work in another way, other times don't, you know. But this one, basically, was a project, 1952-53, where the government, or the military, the army, planned a series of experiments to determine if dogs possessed ESP. And the plan was to, if ESP in animals could be proven, the idea was to put the dogs on the battlefield to see if they could use ESP to locate landmines. Now, they spent countless hours, time, project hours, et cetera, trying to get this to work, and it didn't, you know. It didn't mean that the dogs didn't possess ESP. Some people say, you know, animals do have, you know, a fine, keen sense of ESP and psychic powers, but it didn't work, and so it was shelved, but not before they spent, back in 52, something like $20,000, which was, you know, quite a substantial amount of money back then, but for the Pentagon, you know, it was just sort of like a dip in the ocean. So sometimes projects are initiated because they're guaranteed to work and they make sense. Other times, like this one, it really is like a fringe operation where you think, you know, what was the government thinking of? But the reason they do these projects is because if 1 out of 100 works, and it works really well, and it provides major advantage, then it was all worth it, you know, and forget the other 99 that were just screwball.
Chris, let's move to another question.
Well, it's interesting that they'd be interested in this particular kind of psychic ability of kind of pets, if you will. Rupert Sheldrake has done some good work in this area, quite controversial work, actually, looking at psychic links between dogs and pets and their owners. So yeah. I'm not surprised that that there'd be interest on that level by the government.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. Do you want to comment on Rupert's work?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that the very fact that the military, you know, couldn't sort of organize these dogs and train them to use ESP to find landmines doesn't mean ESP in animals doesn't exist. It's like, how are you going to actually tell a dog, we want you to use your ESP to find metal objects under the sand? You know, they might as well train them to try and use ESP to find a car parked 50 yards down the street.
Well, of course, we train dogs to smell for drugs.
Well, that's right, but, you know, I mean, we weren't talking about drugs. You know, you talk about landmines. Now, whether, you know, they were looking at the idea of explosives having a distinctive smell, that's not mentioned in the files, but if they did, you might as well just say that because dogs have really good noses, you know, they found it through smell rather than psychic powers. So, you know, but that doesn't take away the possibility that some sort of ESP in animals might exist. It's just what the fact that the government didn't prove its point, you know.
Yeah, I think beagles are very good at detecting explosives, if I'm not mistaken. I think they're the breed of choice for detecting nitroglycerin, C4, that sort of thing. Here's a question from Forrest Lake, who's one of our newest additions to the Paracast Forum family, and he's from Australia. Forrest Lake asks, in your studies on UFO aliens and ancient civilizations, would you say that there is evidence that man has been around longer than current scientific belief tells us? If so, could it be possible that man has been more technologically advanced in the past than we give credit for, and these ancient men might be misidentified as ancient aliens?
Yes. That is the short answer. I think, you know,
you kind of addressed that a little bit before, but do you want to kind of
get
antediluvian on us?
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things that I talk about that a number of researchers have suggested over the years is, you know, when people talk about ancient astronauts, a lot of these stories are prompted by the fact that, you know, a lot of ancient people talked about the gods coming down in these fantastic flying machines and teaching them all sorts of advanced technology. Well, one of the other theories that's been suggested is that if in the past there were civilizations that were highly advanced but in different ways to ours, but equally there are different parts of the world that were still at very rudimentary levels, what would happen if, say, a highly advanced culture in, say, ancient India 30 years ago traveled over to what today is central England, when people were living in huts and, you know, just running around trying to grab the odd deer for dinner or whatever, you know, and they saw some sort of advanced flying machine, etc., they might perceive it as, you know, the gods coming down, not realizing, you know, it was an offshoot of their own species from the other side of the world. And today, of course, you know, the initial reaction is, well, you know, we weren't flying anything like that back then. It has to be aliens. But maybe, you know, there is something to the idea that there wasn't sort of like a huge worldwide culture. There were a lot of splinters, and they were at varying degrees of advancement, and some of them weren't even advanced at all. And when they crossed paths, it inevitably led to these different legends and stories that really, you know, today push it more down a UFO path than they do down an ancient offshoot that was highly advanced path.
And who's to say that they don't... They're not still around, maybe suboceanic, living underground, have some sort of dimensional capability.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting theory, you know. I mean, cultures all around the world, again, have legends of, you know, highly advanced beings living underground. I mean, I'll give you an example. Walter Bosley, a former U.S. Air Force Office of Special Operations officer.
And we should mention he's been on the Paracast several times.
Oh, okay. Well, Walter writes under the alias of EA Guest. He's written a number of very good books. And he's openly gone on the record as saying that his dad, who served in the U.S. military, was told that, you know, contrary to what people said, that Roswell was an alien. I mean, you know, who knows if it's sort of like a layer of a cover story, but he was told that the military secretly knew that there was like an ancient civilization on the Earth that was sort of limited in scope and size and that lived deep underground and that occasionally surfaced and occasionally had accidents, one of which occurred at Roswell. You know, it's kind of like the government prefers people to think it was either a military device or it was aliens, rather than having panic that there's some super advanced civilization living below us that are the original rulers of the world, if you like. And
that goes, you know, again to the book that we discussed some years back by the late Mac Tonies, The Crypto Terrestrials.
Yeah, I mean, that theory is very similar. The idea that, you know, the alien presence on the Earth is actually a guise, a camouflage deliberately put in place by entities who, you know, are from the Earth, who lived here long before us, and who know that we believe that them or think they're aliens, and so they encourage that mythology because it acts as a cover for them when they interact with us.
Now, do they interact with governments under their true identity, or do they still say, hey, yes, we come from Alpha Centauri or something?
Well, you know, I mean, these are sort of speculative areas that we just don't know. But what I will tell you is interesting. A lot of people don't know this, but Nick Pope, who was, you know, formerly the UFO desk guy at the British Ministry of Defence between 91 and 94, he wrote a novel in 1999 called Operation Thunderchild, and it was basically based around an attack on the British Isles by alien forces. And in the book, the US government actually has a cover story that the aliens are an ancient human race, and you never saw it. Initially, it's not made clear, you know, are the aliens ancient humans, or is it vice versa? Is it the other way around? But it's like a cover story that the U.S. government puts in place to con- to confuse the Brits when they get like a secret briefing. And, you know, you have to wonder, you know, where did Nick get that from?
Well, that dovetails nicely to a question by Lord Summerisle, who's been a longtime poster at forum.theparacast.com. And he says, not sure if this is really related, but I was listening to an old interview with Mac Tonnes recently, and he mentioned in passing that you, Nick, had come across some declassified documents regarding humanoids encountered on a Pacific island during World War II. Do you remember anything about this, or do you have any more information about that?
Oh, yeah, I think what he's talking about is it wasn't documents, or at least I didn't say it was documents. What it was a story that, well, actually several stories. One was uncovered by Leonard Stringfield, who did a lot of research in the 70s into crashed UFOs, and 70s through the 90s, I should say. And he heard a number of stories of, like, these sort of violent small humanoids. But I did actually investigate a couple of stories from the sort of Japan-China area in the Second World War, where people had claimed to have seen, like, sort of pygmy-like characters in the forest that were, you know, looked sort of like very primitive humans. Now, you know, we weren't talking about access to advanced technologies or anything like that, but, you know, the idea that there were sort of rudimentary or offshoots of the human race that weren't Homo sapien still amongst us. And that's kind of like what Mac spoke about in his book. You know, one of the things that he discussed was the idea that, you know, contrary to what we might assume, perhaps much of the image of the aliens or the crypto-terrestrials, these ancient humans, being highly advanced and having access to all advanced technologies was a bit of a ruse and kind of like a camouflage for the fact that they're actually on their last legs and they use things like holographic imagery to sort of make it seem like they were zipping all around the planet at any given time.
It's all crypto-terrestrial spin control. We have Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
No!
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24-7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
We want to know, how do you use WebEx?
Smartest thing my company did was to give us WebEx. I'm in sales, and now I get twice the meetings, close twice the business, and make twice the money. Guess I should say thank you to the folks in IT.
The new free version of WebEx Meetings lets you take your office anywhere, your desktop, laptop, or mobile device. Get your free WebEx Meetings basic account now at WebEx.com. WebEx from Cisco. WebEx.com. WebEx.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.